Welcome to the Runcast. I'm your host, Josher. This episode is brought to you by the Drop 13 Big Cottonwood Half Marathon and 5K happening June 9th down Big Cottonwood Canyon in Salt Lake City, Utah. You can save 15% on your registration by using the code 18WASATRUN when you register at drop13.com or onhillevents.com. That's the Drop 13 Big Cottonwood Half Marathon and 5K happening June 9th in Salt Lake City, Utah. In today's episode, I sit down with my guest, Amy Thackery, also known as the Sickest Athlete, to talk about her amazing running journey. If you've ever used WebMD to diagnose your ailments, odds are Amy's had it too. As a child, Amy suffered from chronic pneumonia, severe allergies, among many other ailments. Adulthood didn't change much for Amy and her many health issues. As a Crohn's and Hashimoto's disease fighter, Amy has fought through these and many other setbacks and issues to find therapy out on the roads. If you've ever had a setback and are looking for the inspiration to get back at it, you very well could find it in this episode. This is Amy Thackery, the Sickest Athlete. Welcome to the Runcast. I'm your host, Josher. I'm here with Amy Thackery.
Hello.
Amy, thank you for joining us. I'm really excited. We probably talked for a good half hour before this recording. I'm like, I better remember to bring that up during this episode.
We're having a good time, which I appreciate. I like to laugh. It's fun to have good company.
Part of the reason why we talked for a half an hour was mainly so that I could kind of understand why you go by the Sickest Athlete. You have quite a list here, and we're going to go a little bit more into this, and I think this will resonate with a lot of runners, because you've really used running as a therapy for yourself, both physically and emotionally, over the past number of years.
Absolutely. I like your word therapy, because it's productive, it's active, and it's me choosing to do something with whatever situation I've been experiencing. And so I think therapy is a perfect word for what I've done.
Talk a little bit about your childhood and how your childhood kind of shaped some of these health issues and some of these challenges that you've gone through.
So I am the third child of my parents' original marriage. And so with my father, I'm the third of six children. And with my mother, I'm the third of fourth children. So my parents divorced when I was quite young, and I spent time between both of them. And so when I was a young child, my mother told me that I had chronic pneumonia for the first couple years of my life. And we say chronic pneumonia. My mother said that when I was a young infant, I got pneumonia for the first time. So she took me to the doctor, as good parents do. And they gave me an antibiotic. And so I followed the course of the antibiotic, and I'd be done. And about a week later, pneumonia again. And so we went through this process over and over for the first couple years of life, to the point that my mother tells a story of where I nearly died while she was holding me over a vaporizer, waiting to take me back into the hospital and try to figure out a solution that would work for me, so I could be healthy. But I had chronic pneumonia, which left me with scarred lungs, just damage to my lungs as a child.
That chronic pneumonia, you put it kind of as a yearly thing. You got pneumonia pretty much every year until about age 12.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, 10 to 12. I have lots of memories. My mom was in school at the time for nursing. There's another particular memory I have. She had to go get me. I wasn't feeling well. Sure enough, take me back to the doctor. And I can always remember hugging the x-ray machine. If you know, when you get your lungs x-rayed, they kind of put you in this gown and you have to hug around the back of the machine. And so it was a chronic situation. I was just always sick every year with pneumonia. If I got a cold, oh, got to watch it, because here's pneumonia. And so just Dr. Mosier was my doctor in Wichita, Kansas. And he was a very good doctor. He was used to seeing me, but I just have lots of memories of lots of chest x-rays and antibiotics, lots of antibiotics.
But it wasn't just pneumonia that you suffered from. There were severe allergies.
So my mother said too that I had a lot of allergies. She didn't, I couldn't have milk. So she actually gave me Similac formula, need to have, nutrients and protein and calcium until I was about 8 years old. And so when I was about eight, my body seemed to adjust enough that I could have milk. And so from the time I was about eight until I was about 19 years old, I actually drank milk. And so, but I had a lot of allergies. I've always been very allergic to cats, rabbits, just a lot of seasonal allergies, just a lot of that I dealt with.
Yeah, the asthma, the allergies. I'm probably forgetting a few things here. But then you got married age 19.
I did. I met my husband in Wichita, Kansas. I have to say a little plug here. I really wasn't planning on getting married at 19, but when an amazing guy comes along, you just got to go for it. And I've never regretted that decision. He is the yin to my yang, and I appreciate being a great team with him.
Tell me a little bit about your honeymoon.
So we were married in July of 1996, and my husband had the privilege of being raised on a ranch and a dairy farm in Northern California. And so we were living in Wichita, Kansas. We'd been married in Arizona. And so we worked our way up to Northern California on our honeymoon to do our open house. And so we were there enjoying the time. And the family, the extended Thackeray family, had quite a bit of property. And on the property, they had a very large rock. This rock sticks up out of the ground and it kind of asks to be climbed. There was a very large T that someone in the family, one of the cousins, a long time before I had ever arrived, had hung by rope and actually painted this huge T on the front of the rock. And so we were there for our open house. It was decided that Amy needs to climb T Rock, as it was called. So we went up there and we had a great day. It was a very hot July day and we were out exploring around and enjoying being with each other. Climbed up on the rock. My husband's half mountain goat, so he's up walking around, and as a little Kansas girl, I'm like death stuck to the rock because I'm afraid of falling, and you don't really have big rocks like that in Kansas. And so anyway, we had a great time, and as the day went on, we were thirsty. We had neglected to bring water with us, and so my sweetheart said, let's go get a drink. And I said, okay. And there was a stream there, and he suggested that we take a drink out of the stream. Now my first inclination was, that's kind of crazy, what? And he said, well, this is the water that we kind of get for the house. And it's true. Now, granted, the water for the house is much deeper underground and whatnot. And it was water for the ranch. And so anyway, long story short, we both knelt down and we drank out of a stream. Dun, dun, dun. Which actually gave both of us giardia on our honeymoon.
Oh, gosh.
I wouldn't really recommend that as a way to spend your honeymoon in the bathroom with very sick with lots of issues.
Yeah, and if you want to know what that all entails, just go to WebMD.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot available online. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, we don't need to mention it here. When this happened, it triggered some things within your body. Tell us a little bit about how it affected your husband and then you.
So we were both really sick, and Chris, that's my husband, he was especially sick. And we worked our way back home. We went and sought medical attention, which is appropriate, and gave us some antibiotics, and he got better, and I never really did. And so I just kind of felt like I was allergic to everything again. And so just kept going, and I ended up getting pregnant, and I lost that child and just went through a lot of health challenges. We ended up moving to Northern California, having our family, starting and doing all those little things, and I just never really got better. I just felt like I was always allergic to something. I could eat certain things, and I just felt awful. I would just be in so much pain, and I couldn't be very far away from a bathroom. And so I never really looked into it until I was honestly forced to. I'd had a couple hospitalizations for different things, but it wasn't really until 2002 that I was forced to deal with the way I was feeling.
You went into these doctors, and what was the diagnosis for a lot of these issues?
So initially, we didn't really know what was wrong. You kind of just treat the symptoms. You know, I'm having a lot of gastrointestinal distress and imodium and dehydration and other things. It wasn't really brought to a head until in 2002, my husband was in the first year of his MBA program. And it was October, first weekend in October, and I got a really killer stomach ache. And he was off at classes, studying, doing what he needed to do. And I was back at our apartment with our two small daughters let's see, they would have been ages about 2 and 3 at the time. And finally, at the end of the day, I just didn't feel like I could function. I was having a hard time walking, and I had the worst stomach ache I'd ever experienced. And this is before cell phones, right? You know, just the start of the internet. You know, communication is hard to get a hold of people. And so I called a neighbor, and we ended up tracking down my husband to the BYU library. My husband comes home, and it's decided that we need to go into the hospital. And so somebody stays with our kids. We go into Utah Valley, and I pass out because of the pain. At first, they think I have appendicitis. So they knock me out, rush me in, and they do an emergency appendectomy. Okay, they wake me back up. You don't have an appendix. And guess what? It was healthy. How are you feeling? Oh, I still feel awful. And so then they decided to do a CAT scan. And that's when they discovered that I had a bowel obstruction. Put me back under. They gave me a blood transfusion, did a bunch of medical things. I woke up a few days later, and the doctor came in to have a serious conversation with me. And he told me that I had been septic, which is a blood infection. I had waited so long to seek treatment that my bowel had been closed off that long that I had a blood infection and I nearly died. He had said that if we had waited very much longer for me to be brought in, that he didn't know if he would have been able to save me because I wasn't registering much blood pressure. He was 100% serious. He actually asked me, ironically, if I was safe in my home. And I was like, excuse me? And he said, does your husband hurt you? Does he beat you? Because you had to have known that you were sick, that you needed something to, you know, to be seen. You needed something to be done. And I looked at him, I said, absolutely not. It's not at all like that. I just didn't know how sick I was. And I think that sometimes we just become so sick that we just adapt to being sick. And it wasn't until it was, you know, crisis mode that we finally figure out what's going on. So I ended up in the hospital for a week, nasal gastric tube, complete bowel rest. It was just awful. I have these little kids, my husband's trying to survive graduate school, and they do a colonoscopy, take a biopsy, and comes back as Crohn's disease, as severe Crohn's disease.
Wow. And that was 2002.
2002.
So it's been about, what is that, 15?
So 2002, let's see,
16 years
since diagnosis. But when I started seeing the GI doctor, and we went back through my medical history, he feels pretty confident that Giardia was the trigger of Crohn's disease for me, and that I'd actually been having symptoms for years, but I just do what people do. We just keep going because life happens, right? Who has time to be sick?
And with a lot of the health issues that you had when you were younger, I'm sure that probably missed a few of those signals.
And potentially too. And science is, you know, coming to learn more about antibiotics, the effects on the body, and just different things. You know, science thankfully is learning a lot and teaching us a lot, and perhaps it had a hand in it. We don't know. I know my parents loved me and sought to make sure that I had the best care possible, but it's probably just another piece of the puzzle as to where I am now.
All of this will kind of go with your running story, and we're kind of setting that stage. You also... I'm still not done with this list. You've had your gallbladder removed.
Yes, 2009, which ironically is due to Crohn's. Crohn's likes to go with, as in a lot of other autoimmune disorders, as I've been told by doctors, is that the body likes to attack kind of one system to another. And so it's not uncommon to have Crohn's and have other issues as well. So in 2009, my gallbladder was removed because it was diseased and inflamed and I was having issues. So I had surgery to take that out.
Also, you've had a number of broken bones.
Yes.
And that was due to, what was it?
So
can't remember the name.
So because I didn't, you know, I had a lot of allergies. I didn't, you know, get some of that maybe like I could have growing up. And so my bones kind of suffered. Crohn's is an absorption issue, especially in the small intestine, where my disease is most active. And so I had broken bones going up, had a broken arm, I had a broken wrist. And then when I was running in 2013, I had my first stress fracture. So at this point with my medical history, Crohn's, right? Doctor says, let's give you a DEXA scan. And so I was like, what's that? And they said, well, this is a bone density test. Let's take a look and see kind of what you're at. So I went in and had the scan. They brought me back and said, well, Amy, you have osteopenia. And I said, what's that? And he said, well, so osteoporosis is where you have really brittle bones and that, you know, your bones can break. He says, osteopenia is just a little bit above that. So honestly, I recommend that you probably avoid extensive running as you've been doing for many years, because I can't guarantee that you're not going to have more stress fractures. So you just need to keep that in mind. I said, well, is there anything I can do about it? And they said, why don't you go and take a lot of calcium, magnesium, and vitamin D. Come back in a few years and we'll do a DEXA scan. And if your levels are the same, then you're making progress. They says, if you do develop more into osteoporosis, then we can give you additional medicine for that. But yay, more medicine. Great.
And then also, and I'm sure there's probably a few things I'm missing here, but you also suffer from Hashimoto's disease, which I have as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
So 2013, 2014, just not feeling well. And I was kind of struggling with a little bit of depression, which isn't uncommon, but the doctor said, let's do some general workup on you. So I went in and they tested my thyroid levels in the toilet. So he says, you have Hashimoto's. And I said, well, what is Hashimoto's? And they said, actually, because you have Crohn's, they're kind of related. This is kind of, I guess, part of a triad that they told me. And they said, the good news is that this is very treatable. And the really good news is that feeling cold and not wanting to eat, or maybe eating too much and, you know, feeling depressed, this is actually can all be really regulated by your thyroid. And so I thought, there's nothing else I can do. And they says, really, honey? No, this is the kind of thing that you really do need to take medicine for. And so I do take medicine to treat my thyroid, and it's made a huge, huge difference. So Hashimoto's as well.
So a lot of these health issues really have kind of shaped the experience that you've had as a runner. How did you start running? Because there's a really cool story that I just think, I mean, you have to put it in your words. Tell us a little bit about...
So we kind of have to go back just a teeny bit. And so in all fairness, from diagnosis in 2002, from a diagnosis in 2002 until I got pregnant with my last child, I was treated with pretty much standard medicine. These are immune suppressing drugs that they use to treat Crohn's disease. And so the thought is, they do not know why my immune system is attacking my small intestines. So let me tell just a little bit, very briefly, about what Crohn's disease in general and what it does in my body. So Crohn's disease is an autoimmune disease of the digestive system in the body. It can occur anywhere from the mouth all the way down through the rectum. And so it can occur the esophagus, the stomach, the large intestine, the small intestine. And so for me, I have my Crohn's is just Crohn's disease. There's Crohn's that can involve your colon, called ulcerative colitis. I don't deal with that as much as just strictly in my small intestine. And so what happens is, for whatever reason, the immune system attacks the small intestine and it causes thickening and damage to the tissues. They like to call it strictures, which is essentially a narrowing of the tissue. And there's a lot of, you know, inflammation that goes with that, bleeding and some other unpleasant side effects of this. We don't have to get too graphic into that, but
go to WebMD.
That's right. Go to WebMD. And so anyway, for me, this affects the last foot of my intestines. And so from 2002 until early 2007, I was on standard medicine that they use to treat Crohn's. There's a lot of negative side effects. They require you to get a lot of extensive blood work done regularly, especially to check your liver, just because there's a lot of side effects beyond what you normally deal with long term that can happen from being on some of this really powerful medicines. But on the other hand, what options do you really have? You know, you want to live, you want to experience life, and you just feel awful. And so eventually Crohn's can cause the small intestine to close off and surgery is needed, where they cut out the diseased tissue, put you back together, and you kind of enter this vicious cycle of surgery after surgery after surgery with active Crohn's disease. So I had children all throughout that time period. I'd had a couple kids when I was diagnosed in 2002. And in 2006, I had my fourth child, a wonderful little boy. Was looking forward to feeling better. When I am pregnant, Crohn's disease is especially brutal on me. I have a hard time keeping anything down and in me. And so it's a miracle that my children are healthy and born. And so anyway, long story short, I ended up getting pregnant, surprise, surprise, with my fifth child about 4 months after I had my fourth child. And so I didn't know that being on an antibiotic can make birth control ineffective. So if there's somebody who doesn't know that out there, I hope I've made your life slightly easier. I had a C. diff infection, which was an infection in my colon. So I was on an antibiotic, and lo and behold, I'm pregnant with my fifth child. So this was a big shock, because I I had just been really sick for 9 months, and I didn't really want to go through all of that again, but here I am. So I went into the GI doctor and I asked what my options were. And the GI doctor said, well, the medicine that you're on can cross over. It does. You know that we recommend that you are off of all of this medicine for 6 months before you even try to conceive. So I'm not going to lie. There's risk involved with that, and it's likely. He asked me if I wanted to pursue an abortion, which I found awful. And he told me, because he knew how sick I was, that my health outweighed the health of my child. For me, that was a real turning point. I know that the doctor was just being honest and trying to do what was best for me, but I just didn't feel like that was an option for me. I thanked him for his time and told him I didn't know what I was going to do. And I just really did some soul searching. I really felt like I had poisoned my child unknowingly. And, you know, when you find out, you've already been pregnant a month. And so I was on all this medicine. And so it was at this point that I thought, I've got to find other solutions. This is not working. I immediately stopped all of the medicine because whenever I was pregnant, I was never on any medicine for all of my pregnancy. At this point, I said, I got to do something. I started doing research, learning for myself, and discovered that a lot of research said that diet and exercise can help with this. And so I thought, well, here we go. So I went ahead and had my daughter in October of 2007, and thankfully she was completely healthy. The whole pregnancy, I was so worried. I would just pray every day, please, 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 please. And when they put her in my arms and she was healthy, I was very, very grateful. Because I would have done anything. I would have raised her. It wouldn't have been a problem. But I just felt so responsible for something that I couldn't control, but just the impact of what it could be on her life for the rest of her life. So at this point, I started finding, there's got to be another way. I've got to do something. I've been doing this and it's not working. I'm not really any better. I have no quality of life. I'm sick all the time. I have upper respiratory infections all the time because the drugs they give you suppress your body's natural immune response. So my kids go to school, they get a cold, mom's got a cold, you know, just all the time. Just did not feel well.
So you have your daughter in October of 2007. A couple months later, mid-December, you decided to join a gym.
Yep. Well, I don't know what to do, right? So gym, I've got a kids at home. I don't have a lot of space. You know, I need to run away for a little bit, right? Just, you know, break from my kids. And so I go to my local Gold's Gym is what it was called at the time. And I got a membership and my husband was sweet and supportive. He was like, are you sure? And I was like, we got to do something. And I started exercising and it was awful because I felt so awful. I would try anything. I would get on the treadmill. I did not like that. The elliptical. I just felt so lousy. And I wasn't taking any medicine either. And the doctor was not happy with me. I actually went and spoke with my GI doctor and I said, hi, I've been doing some research, you know, the internet just starting, WebMD, right? And his response was very negative, unfortunately. He told me in not so many words that I could go out and do some experimenting and look around, and I was welcome to come back and he would heal me. He was really rude, honestly. And I know he just wanted what was best for me, but it was really, really discouraging. Because I just wanted to find a solution. And so I just started exercising and just, you know, and I thought, I didn't know what I was doing. And at that point, I decided I needed some help. I needed somebody that had more experience with exercise and being healthy than I did. I knew how to be sick. I didn't know how to be healthy.
That's very evident with what we've talked about so far. So you joined this gym, then you met a certain individual.
I did.
Paul Hafen.
His name is Paul Hafen. He was a trainer at Gold's at the time. He was a BYU student getting his degree, I believe, in exercise science, his bachelor's degree. And I went in and was like, hi, I don't feel well and I kind of want some training or I don't know how to do anything. And thankfully, I was put with Paul, and he was very engaging. Paul's great with people, very friendly, and thankfully, very, very knowledgeable. Because I really needed to have somebody that had a lot of knowledge, not just in how to use a lift, you know, weights properly and how to lift and to go run. I needed somebody that could also understand what my health challenges were. And so Paul and I sat down and we talked about some goals and kind of how to get moving. And he showed me how to lift and whatnot. And we thought, well, what are we going to do? And we settled on running. Running, he was very experienced, had run cross country in high school and was a good runner, pretty quick and very capable in what he was doing. And so running is cheap. You just need a pair of shoes. And I had the gym, had a treadmill. So he got me running. And we started by setting a goal to run a 5K.
It always starts with a 5K.
Got to start somewhere. We started on the treadmill and he told me pick a race. And so actually my first 5K was run in Sugar House Park. It was an all female race. It was the Love Your Body 5K. And we trained for it. And my goal was to run the entire race without stopping. Sugar House Park is pretty hilly. I don't know if people realize that. And so I got to the course and I went, oh, I got to run the whole course. I got to go up and down these hills without stopping. So that was the goal.
So he introduced you to running. He helped you lose weight. You lost how many?
Well, through the course of his tutoring, I ended up losing about 45 pounds. Amazing. When I was my highest, I was 190 pounds. And so I'm a little leaner than that now. You guys can do the math if you want to do that. But it was amazing just with his work and, you know, talking to me about diet and exercise consistency. He got me lifting weight, showed me how to do things that I never thought I would do, clean and jerks and just, you know, all these great things. And slowly but surely he helped me start to transform myself. And so what's cool was that Paul, we did the first 5K and he was like, what do you think? And I thought, yeah, I was really excited, but he didn't push me. He wasn't like, go, let's do another one. You know, he always let me own that. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, I kind of need something to work to, you know, toward again. And so we set a goal for another one. And that's just kind of how it started with that. And when we did the 5Ks for a while, I started to get a little confidence and enjoyed what I was doing. And then we felt it was time for a 10K. So we did a 10K. My first 10K was out at Thanksgiving Point. I can't remember the name of that one. My family came for all of that. And I do know my girls ran in that one. Ran my first 10K. I couldn't believe I was running 6.2 miles. And then I ran a 10K with him one time around Oktoberfest. And it was fun because he encouraged me. One of my most favorite memories with Paul was we were actually running a 5K. It was before AAF Hospital did their big cancer run like they do now. They did this little 5K. And so we had signed up for it together. And this is probably only my second or third one. I hadn't been running a whole lot. And we were doing the same race and we had run together. And I laugh about that now because I must have been so slow for him, but he was so patient. I cannot imagine how slow I was. But anyway, we ran the race and he of course finished in front of me and I had my watch. I had upgraded, got a little watch so I could see how far I was. That was a nice going. That was a nice gift from my sweetheart. And anyway, I had about three quarters of a mile left and I just wasn't feeling very well and I really wanted to quit and I was about ready to just kind of walk and be done with it. I hadn't felt well and I looked up and Paul was running towards me and he had finished and turned around to come find me and he ran the rest of the race with me. He didn't push me, he didn't make me go faster, right? But he just sat there with me side by side. And it just meant so much to me. It was just the moral support of what I was doing and his encouragement to me. Come on, Amy, I know you can do it. You've come so far. Come on, come on. And it just meant a lot to me because he was right there with me, guiding me just like he had done.
You know, it's true. I've had a couple of great trainers. And it makes a world of difference when you have somebody who isn't just there to show you, like you said, to do how to work the weights or whatever, but that actually is engaged with you, knows you, and knows what you're capable of doing.
Yeah.
And is just there for your, just, and is there just to support you.
Yeah. And I think I like what you said, capable of. I think there's a lot of value in somebody seeing the potential and also seeing beyond the moment. And when life is hard, that's hard to see. But when you have people like that, that have knowledge and can help you be what they can see you have in you, that's powerful. And it really taught me a lot about people that day. I've used that actually a lot as parenting. When I've done 5Ks with my families over the years, I will always turn around when I'm finished and I go out and I go back and I find my last kid, the last one. And my kids all see me coming and I'm cheering them on, but I find that last kid. And I do what Paul did for me that day. I don't, you know, make them run faster and I'm just right there with them, buddy running until the end.
Oh, that's really beautiful. And I think what's also really beautiful and really telling of this relationship that you've created and maintained with Paul is that he is still your trainer.
He is. He is a busy guy. He's got a family. He's got three wonderful kids and a lovely wife. He is finishing his doctorate at BYU, and he's a busy guy, but he still trains me. And the reason why I really appreciate that is because, again, I've got a lot of complexities to what I deal with. And I have such trust in him and everything that he has said that I should do, and this is what will happen if I do it, has always happened. And so I just appreciate that because I don't have that knowledge. I don't know how to, you know, make my body work the same with all the health challenges that I have. He understands what I can do for fuel, how I need to run, what pace is good for my heart rate and my weight and my health and being injured. I mean, anything. And the fact that he's always been an advocate for me, I've just really appreciated. He's given me the confidence to move forward and believe in myself when honestly, I didn't have that within myself. And I think it's great. He's been with me for a long time.
He runs these first, you know, number of races, these 5Ks, these 10Ks with you, and you know, you feel slow and whatnot.
Definitely.
Over these years, over the, 10, 11 years that he's been training you, you've gotten a little bit faster.
You know, this is the beauty of the body, I have to say. I cannot take credit for this. The body will respond with how you treat it. If you're inactive, the body will respond to that. If you are active, the body will respond to that. If you eat bad food that's not so good for you, the body will respond to that. If you eat healthy food, the body will respond to that. Do we see a theme here? So having someone that has adequate knowledge like Paul and able to say, Amy, you need to go out and you need to do this workout for this many miles at this pace, which is often really hard, and do it this way. When I go out and do it, the body responds through the process of time. It's not an immediate thing, but it's a process. It's a gradual process, and it's been amazing.
Well, and you've placed in a number of races. Talk about the first race that you placed.
Okay, so I love Southern Utah. Utah is such a beautiful place. The red rocks, the heat. I love warm weather. And so going down to Southern Utah is a real treat. My sweetheart loves pickleball. So he's a really big pickleball player, and St. George is a huge place for pickleball. So he runs a little, and I play pickleball a little. And in the end of April, there's a big tournament that they do down there. And lo and behold, he's got a tournament and there's a race, a half marathon. Yay! It's the best of both worlds for both of us. So anyway, I go down there and I run and I finish. And what? I placed second in my age group. I'm so floored. I cannot even believe it. It was beautiful. I was happy to be there. Saw a couple people that I knew. And when I saw my name that I had placed second in my age group, I was just shocked that that had happened. And it was just a real tender kind of a moment for me. I mean, you know, 10 years ago, I'm running like, you know, 10 and a half, 11 minute miles, which is fine. Everybody's on their own journey. But it was just the sweetness of the evolution and really the hard work. I'm not any different than anybody else. I don't have some special gene or like some special muscle fiber. It really is just about hard work and consistency. And so for me, that was a culmination of many years of efforts. It was just really sweet.
And so you've placed in a number of other races. You also talked a little bit before we started recording, you had some fourth place finishes.
Yeah. This year, the 2017 was the year of fourth place for me, which is fine. It's not that we need to have it quantified, but it is for me. Running helps me deal with my health challenges. I don't run to be vain. I don't run to be skinny or the best person. For me, running literally helps suppress this crazy immune system of mine. It helps me be able to be a mom and to be active and take care of my family and my kids, which means a lot to me. That's the most important thing that I do. And so hitting goals for me, having goals, running and having races helps me be able to keep doing what I need to do so it doesn't get old, so it doesn't wear out. I got to have goals. And so for me, what's my options? I can get faster. I can try to be better for me. I honestly race against me.
I just think it's amazing. I mean, just showing that, because I've been in a similar situation. When I started running and I lost the weight and everything, you know, I got pretty fast. You know, I got some good PRs in that. But then when I got sick, when I was diagnosed with my Hashimoto's disease and everything, it all kind of caught a little derailed. But I mean, what, I mean, a testament, because that, I mean, that takes not just so much hard work and dedication, but it takes really the knowledge, you know, that Paul brings with the nutrition, with everything. And it has to be that perfect balance. And I think it really shows, especially athletes who do suffer from autoimmune diseases, that this can be done.
It can be done. And that's what I just appreciate, having an option. It's really discouraging to sit in a medical provider's office and be told, this is your stark reality. You need to accept it. And that's true. But when control is taken away from you and your options are limited, you've got to decide what you're going to do. It's ironic, because having these challenges has really helped me be a lot more resilient than I don't think I would have ever developed without it. I've learned a lot. And you know what? I've learned that I can do hard things. And it's not about me. Other people can do hard things too. We all have hard things in our lives. We have a choice. Are we going to do something about it or not? And it's okay if people are not at the point where they're ready to do something about it. But if you are, you have options. And it's really powerful to be in that process, to kind of do what you can, take a hold of your options, and you decide based on what you've been given.
There's one story I really want to hit on, because in reading your story and understanding a little bit more about these goals, you have this kind of big goal that a lot of these athletes, a lot of the runners have as a high benchmark, and that's obviously the Boston Marathon.
Yes, America's oldest marathon. Dun, dun, dun. Yes, Boston.
You trained hard throughout the winter of 2016, 2017 to run the Phoenix Marathon last year. Tell us a little bit about this experience, how that's kind of changed your perspective, changed your approach, and everything that kind of went through that learning experience.
Well, so doing a marathon is a big deal, especially for me, because I have to be careful. I don't want to get stress fractures, because if I can't be active, running, you know, can lead to a lot of different issues. I've done triathlons before, but at this stage, I lack a lot of time. I have three teenagers. And so for me, getting my running in is the most quickest way to do a lot of that. It takes a lot of time to bike. I like to swim. And so anyway, I got to pick a marathon, right? You know, I want to hit this goal. Only, I believe the statistic is only 10% of all runners who try a marathon actually qualify for Boston. So it's kind of a threshold, I guess. Seen, you know, as athletes, this is what an athlete does. This is what a runner does. You get to qualify for this big Boston marathon that they only hold once a year in April. You have to submit a qualifying time from an earlier race. The course has to be Boston, you know, it has to be certified, I think, by U.S. Track and Field as an appropriate course to submit a time for. So which marathon am I going to do? You know, I'd love to do a lot, but I really can't. I have to be careful. I can't wear out my bones too bad, because it takes a lot on the body to train for a full marathon, 26.2 miles for anybody who might not know that. And so I chose Phoenix, Arizona, because I was actually born there and I have a lot of my family that lives there. And it's a February race, and my birthday's in February, and it's cold in Utah in February, and so an opportunity to go have some sunshine is really appealing to me. So I picked that race, and the goal after talking to Paul was I was going to run all through the winter. Winter's hard for me in Utah. Sometimes I struggle with a little bit of depression, kind of the seasonal issue with too many cloudy days. And so running a marathon training will get me out, will get me moving, and give me a goal to work towards. And so I wanted to set my sights on Boston. And so we went out, we trained, and about 5 days before the race, I started having gastrointestinal issues. I'll just say I started to have diarrhea, which is pretty common with Crohn's. Sorry,
this is
everybody.
This is a running podcast. I'm sure we've talked about it before.
Yeah, well, I think you had a question if anybody's had like issues in their pants. I'm like, would you like me to write the book on that? Because I've got, some people might have one or two stories. I've got lots of stories. So anyway, 5 days before my big race, I started having diarrhea. And I wasn't initially worried, but I don't want to start a marathon dehydrated. That's bad. And so as the days progressed, a couple days before, I started taking a little bit of medicine. I actually do have some medicine I keep on backup, because Crohn's is Crohn's. I don't put my head in the sand about it, but it is what it is. So I am prepared, because I have people that care about me and depend upon me. So I spoke with Paul and I told Paul what I was experiencing. And Paul said, well, he said, you got a couple choices. You can go out with the pace that we set, and you can head out and you can go to Boston Qualify, and you can risk the DNF, which is, what is it?
Do not finish.
Do not finish, right? Nobody wants to not finish something you start, right? Or Paul said that I could just save it for another day. I did not like the second option. I was kind of mad about it, actually, as I was processing through it. I appreciated his honesty, and I knew he was exactly right, but I wasn't really ready to accept that this was probably the best choice that I needed to do. So I'm a prayerful person. I was prayerful about it, and I got up that morning, and I knew I wasn't feeling very well. And so I did. I went out and I ran a very slow time for me. It wasn't crazy slow. I finished in like 4:05, 4:10, somewhere around. And they're not bad, but you know, I need to run a 3:45 to Boston Qualify. And so as I was running and I started not feeling well, my hydration is going to be so much better this year. We know a lot more. We've learned a lot more. My family was there holding signs along the course, cheering me on, helping to distract me from feeling sorry for myself. And about halfway through the race, I started to just let it go and just let it be. Amy, stop feeling sorry for yourself. This isn't the worst thing in the world. Think of what you've already done. And I started to just really do what a marathon is about, which is the freedom of running and the racing experience. And so every few miles, I would see my dad and my stepmom and my oldest daughter with their signs. And I really looked forward to seeing them. And they were lifting my spirits, and they had some nutrition stuff for me. And true to form, because I had been having diarrhea, the last half of the race, I started really struggling. And my daughter had offered to ghost run with me. And for those who don't know what that is, that's where you've got a buddy or somebody who kind of runs on the course with you, kind of like what Paul had done, kind of like what I've tried to do for my kids, just a little bit of moral support. When I ran Utah Valley in 2013, my daughter ran with me through part of that. And it was funny because my husband is great, but I just couldn't have him in that space. It makes no sense. He's wonderful and he's supportive. But I just couldn't have him in that space. He's so good athletically at so much he's done in his life. And I don't know, I think I would have felt a little more like pressure. He's so tall anyway. He's your size. He's like 6'5". And so my stride is not exactly the same as his. So anyway, my oldest daughter was there in 2013, and she had clothes with her and decided to change at about mile 20 to kind of just see how mom's doing. And so she went with me, and about 21, I threw up. I finally had it, you know, I wasn't taking anything in, blah, lost it. She's like, come on, mom, are you all right? I was like, okay. So, you know, we started at it again, and she just ran with me, you know, off and on. We walked a little bit through to the end. And when we hit the corral, you know, the chute at the end, she didn't run down with me, but she had finished, you know, the last half of the race, you know, well, 5 to 6 miles with me. And I just appreciated her support. I was so grateful when I crossed that finish line. I knew it was the right choice to just go out and run it. I know, even though it wasn't what I wanted, but I still was able to have such an amazing day at the race and with my family. I got an IV after, felt much, much better, and I still had a PR, so I rang the PR bell.
Awesome.
And it was a good day. I learned a lot through that race.
You know, that's a really beautiful story. I've found often, you know, through the struggles and through, you know, those tough times, that especially when we're going through or pursuing a dream like that, when we have those setbacks, often there are so many great things that come from that, whether it's a renewed perspective, because you're kind of forced to kind of be humbled by it.
Yeah. And if I'm being honest, I really wasn't wanting that that day, because, you know, I felt like I had all this hard work behind me, and Crohn's keeps me real, keeps me humble, keeps me understanding that I'm going to need people. I don't care how hard I work. I don't care, you know, it's always going to be an X factor. I'm never going to be able to control it. So I need to learn to adapt. I needed my perspective changed that day.
Definitely changed, for sure. And I think the awesome thing is, you're going back there in a couple of weeks.
I am. My husband and I have a little joke. Okay, so my birthday is coming up. What do I want for my birthday? I don't really want anything but a race. What do I want for Mother's Day? I don't really want anything but a race. My hubby and I laugh about it. He wants a pickleball tournament and I want a race. And honestly, we should just do what we love, right? And sometimes those get to converge together, which is even better. And so I'm going to be turning 41. Got it all planned out. This one will be a little bit sweeter because my daughter will be leaving on an LDS mission about 2 weeks after I get back. And so after we get back from being in Arizona. And so I'm grateful to have her there. I will miss her for a year and a half while she is gone in Singapore and Malaysia, having her own crazy adventure. And I can't wait. I'm excited to head back again. And I am better prepared than I was last year.
So the goal still is that BQ.
For now,
right? You know, Crohn's, yeah, depends on what Crohn's.
Well, and that's kind of why it's hard, because at any time I could start another major flare and then surgery and then all my training is gone. And not that that's the end of the world, but man, I sure would like to have it while I'm ready for it. I don't know what's going to happen, and that's okay. I'll adjust and we'll figure it out. But man, I sure would love to be able to have it while I'm riding the wave, right?
Right. Well, I can't wait. You know, this actually airs about a week after. So,
oh no, it's out there.
We probably, I'll give an update at the end of this episode, because I'm rooting for you.
I appreciate
it. You know, so many of us who run every day and maybe take it for granted. In your shoes, any day could be that day that derails what you've worked for. And if there's a flare up or what have you, I mean, that makes every run that you do that much more precious.
It really does. I don't talk a whole lot of, you know, I could give people the details of my life. I take supplements every day. You know, I have to take fish oils and iron and calcium and magnesium and turmeric and just all these things just to kind of keep myself going. You know, I go without food that I know my body is intolerant to, not because I don't want it, but because I just love health and the ability to choose and freedom and run and my family especially a lot more than I like the other stuff. It can taste good in my mouth, but man, it's not good anywhere else.
You know, I think your running journey and your life story is amazing, because really, I mean, it's a testament of taking every day as a gift. You know, there's so many runners out there that are going through a lot of these issues with Crohn's disease, with autoimmune diseases, whatever they may
or
be.
Or any disease. You know, you've spoken a lot about addict to athlete. Everybody's got something hard that they're dealing with. And I think there's power in being open and understanding what somebody else is experiencing. I learned so much by watching assisted runners, you know, those who are being pushed that are not able to run themselves, hearing people talk about their addictions and how they've turned running, you know, as a force to deal with it. I feel inspired. I feel better because of that. And I love it, because we're all individual, but we're all headed towards the same goal. Every one of us, thousands of runners, each have our own story and our own challenges, and we're going to find our own path to the finish line. And I love that. I love the diversity among all of us. We can do hard things. It does not have to break us.
That's true. Kind of going back to the theme of this episode, and which is also your Instagram handle, The Sickest Athlete. I know you're very humble about it. you know, you don't want
people. It's a
people,
play on words.
It's
we,
a play on words.
We can thank my teenagers for
I
that.
I think we understand that you have gone through a number of sicknesses. But you know what? Through all of this, of what you've gone through, be proud of that. Because you are a sick athlete. And
thank
I mean
you.
That as the cool kids say it, you know.
Well, I just want people to know that they can do it too. I'm not any different than anybody else, you know. I'm not going to be some Olympian unless they get, like, you know, the geriatrics involved in the Olympics. Oh, wait, that's the Huntsman Senior Games.
Yes.
I can shoot for that, too.
St. George.
That's right. When I turned 50, I only got 9 more years. My hubby and I will go down there and we'll do our own thing. But, you know, we can do it. You know, take a hold of your health. question. Do not settle for an answer that you don't like until you've turned every stone over. And that's okay. To me, that's kind of my takeaway. If I would have just accepted it, if I wouldn't have looked at the faces of my children and my wonderful husband and just been what it would have been, I wouldn't have learned all that I've learned. Because honestly, if I'm being 100% really honest, I didn't do it at first for me. I did it for them. I did it because I wanted to be here, because they needed me. And the really cool thing is that eventually, in the process of time, now I do it for me. And I'm free as I can be with what I deal
with. Right. What one thing would you want that one listener right now who's kind of tread a similar path as you to know?
That's a really good question. I would say keep asking, keep moving forward, keep doing it. If you know something's not right, then keep at it till you find a solution for you. As I said earlier, until you've turned over every stone and you know, be that dreamer, be that person that finds the solution that works for your situation. Just because something hasn't been done before does not mean that it cannot be done. You know, you might be that person to set a new standard. That's why, you know, the Olympics are going to be happening here. And I love the story of the Olympics, you know, because it's a story of hope. It's a story of being the best you can be. Everyone needs to find their own best self in whatever way that is. If you find that running, then do that. If you find that creating music, then do that. If you find that helping people, then do that in whatever capacity is. And don't let adversity, challenges define you. They're just one part in that journey towards your finish line.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing this story. Where can people find you on social media? Obviously, at The Sickest Athlete.
On Instagram. I'm not much of a Twitter person. I could be, but, you know, I've got a lot. I've got 5 kids. I've got a lot going on in my life right now. I do work, and I do run 6 days a week, and so I get really cranky if I don't run. And so my husband's like, you need to go out and do a run. You're getting kind of moody, and I can't be like that. But Instagram, excuse me, The Sickest Athlete. And I am also on Facebook, Amy Spear Thackeray. It's got my maiden name in there as well. And I would love to hear about you. I would love to learn from you. Honestly, I know everybody has a story. I love to go to races and talk to people. People are amazing and they're fascinating. How we all run with different strides and different gaits, you know, and we all get to the finish line together at our own way. I love it.
You know, that's what I really love about this kind of this change of format with the Runcast, because season 3 is all about you, the runner. These are your running stories. Anyway, we could talk all night.
You're so great to be with. We appreciate it.
So I really appreciate you sharing your story. And those listeners out there who are going through a lot of these similar issues, who are going through other health issues, it does get better. And you can ask those questions. And you know, whether you're Boston qualifying or whether you're running 5Ks, it doesn't matter. Find a way.
Exactly.
And again, thank you so much. So
thank you.
All right. Good luck in Phoenix.
All right. We'll let you know.
We apologize for the slight technical difficulties with our audio there. We had an issue with one of the microphones. Luckily, I have Amazon Prime and I'll have a new microphone in time for the next episode. But I would like to once again thank Amy for sharing her inspiring story. It truly is a testament that anything is possible with the right approach, right timing, and right mindset. If you are wondering if Amy got that Boston Marathon qualifying time at the Phoenix Mesa Marathon, the answer is yes. She reached her goal with a finish time of 3 hours, 40 minutes, and 1 second. That's an 8:24-minute average pace. Simply amazing. Congratulations, Amy. We can't wait to see you run the streets of Boston. You have definitely earned this moment. As a reminder, you can listen to past episodes of the show by visiting us online at therunncast.net or listen to us on podbash.com, Spreaker, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. Make sure to connect with us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Runcast, where we share the latest running news, have race giveaways to local Utah races, and do what we do best, talk about running. Until the next episode, this is your host, Josher, reminding you to keep running.